welcome to the very first episode of the Erie Reader Podcast, the Erie Listener. I'm Jay Stevens.
Hi, and I'm John Linvey, Jay Stevens' co-host.
And we got a good show tonight, and hopefully from now on out. But the first thing, I don't know, what's on your mind, John? I just want to...
What's on my mind? Okay, yeah. Well, we were talking right before this. We were talking about Pacific Rim, and I know there's a lot of people who don't like Pacific Rim, and I want to know the whys behind it. I've heard statements such as epic blandness and things like that. So,
what's do you know what's the premise?
The premise of the movie, basically, from what I've seen, is that Pacific Rim is basically a live action version of an anime called Evangelion, which is an old anime that's been super popular for anyone who knows anything. Like, if you like maybe had an interest in anime, at some point someone said, oh, you should go watch Evangelion or Akira. Like, it's like one of those up there that everyone kind of knows about, and it has to do with big mechs, giant monsters, and the pilots are putting themselves at some sort of like weird psychotic risk, and that's from the trailer, you know, it's kind of what the movie seemed like.
What are the negative comments, have you heard?
It's you know, it's a lot of nothing. It's a big dumb movie, and I don't know, it's supposed to be a blockbuster, so isn't that what you want? I mean, like, people said the same thing about Independence Day, and a lot of people like that movie.
I have to say, I mean, I remember when Transformers came out and I saw that. I felt that it was pretty stupid.
Right. Well, Transformers is a bad movie, like, straight up, but at least with Pacific Rim, you could see, like, the biggest complaint with Transformers is, like, when the action scenes happened, it was just a mess. It was just a visual mess. You couldn't tell anything was happening. But with Pacific Rim, at least from what I've seen in trailers, and I have yet to go see the full film, is that, you know, they do a good job, or Del Toro does a good job of, like, having good, like, oh, man, giant robots that are actually affected by, like, gravity and weight and things like that.
I think one of the things that made Independence Day successful was that it was schlocky, you know, like...
Right.
It was... It had a low-budget feel to it.
It's Emmerich, right? Independence Day?
I think so.
Yeah.
And I think there is something to be said about when you see a movie that's schlocky, your expectations during it disappear, right?
And
you just get involved in the rush of the movie. Like, what's that, Sharknado?
Yeah, Sharknado, right. Yeah.
Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen it. That's a sci-fi original, right?
Yeah.
That's not even going to make it to theaters. I don't have cable, so I have to wait for that stuff to hit.
I guess it's
Netflix.
new trend, right, where they're making these really schlocky, over-the-top movies.
I don't know if it's new, but
it's a renaissance.
I think people are enjoying that ironic humor, or that, you know, that stuff more. You know, before, because those things existed. Like, go back and watch, like, Carnosaur,
right,
and like those things that came out right after Jurassic Park. Being bad movies have always existed,
right?
But now it's just like, I think it's a little too aware,
right? I got something on my mind. Stupid Facebook comments. I don't mean necessarily other people's. I also include my own. You know, it's been a big week for very divisive issues with the George Zimmerman trial,
right? Yeah,
his acquittal, and then the recent cover of the Rolling Stone magazine, which had the Boston Marathon bomber. I'm going to butcher his name. Tsarnaev, I think.
I do.
Tsarnaev.
You're on your own.
And for some reason, those two issues, there's very obvious reasons why those two issues have strongly divided people. And I've gotten into it a little bit on Facebook on both things, with both on the Erie Reader website and my own Facebook posts, as well as some of my friends. And as I'm writing these stupid comments,
at least you recognize that they're dumb. Like, at least, like, it's like the first step of, like, the multi-step process.
I mean, you can feel yourself, you know, tight. You're like, all pissed off, you know, and it's hot out, and I'm cranky, and, like, anyone who disagrees with me is stupid and a racist.
Uh-huh.
it may be true, right? But that's not kind of what you should write when you write a Facebook.
Yeah, so is that what happened? Basically, you got it. Yeah, I avoid it like the plague.
Yeah.
I really do. Like, I use Facebook not... at all, actually. Like, I have an account, but, like, I don't engage with it ever. The only times I ever use it, I guess, is when I'm promoting my own stuff,
right,
which that's honestly the best way to do it, because then no one can be mad at you.
Exactly.
I have this is probably saying too much, but a relative of mine, after the Zimmerman, all that stuff happened, my wife, because, you know, she has some friends, and she's a teacher, so she's really PC when she's on Facebook, but she just said something like, this is kind of like, this whole thing is frustrating. I think it's very like a benign statement, like, oh, this whole situation is frustrating, which I think everyone on any side could say, yeah, this whole thing is kind of an ordeal. And my relative of mine sent her like this huge list of like why the ruling was good. And it's just like, oh my God, my wife is getting bullied by my aunt on the internet. Like, what is happening?
I feel like comment sections are garbage.
Yeah, as
you know,
a rule.
You see it in the newspaper sections. Not so much in the e-reader because we don't have them in comments yet. But I think when you go to your local paper or something, it's just brutal. And I feel I have two minds about it. One is I think there are two things that you can take away from it. One, I feel like, because I remember when comment sections and listservs first popped up, and we used to get into these long conversations with people. You know, it was always a small group of people taking similar stands, and you would just write these mammoth like comments or dissertations on various subjects. And the conversations actually weren't all that bad. A lot of times people came to an agreement or agreed to disagree by the end, or someone would refer to Hitler and the conversation would be over. But I feel like that's degraded severely since the early days. And I feel like there's two things to think about. One, we had a lost opportunity for interesting civil discourse on the internet. And I feel like that's because one of the early rules was not to, when you hosted one of these sites, there was no censorship. That was what was cool about these comment sections in the internet. It was free, right?
Right.
It was liberating. You had all kinds of various opinions you would never see in the newspaper. But now, so I think as a result, people got carried away. The meanest, ugliest people remained because they drove everyone else away. And sort of reasonable, I won't say normal, but reasonable people who had reasonable discourse were chased away having to deal constantly with this crap.
I mean, I think that's partially true, but I think a lot of what has to do with how discourse is handled on the internet. I mean, originally when the internet came out, you weren't yourself. You know, you had a name, you had a new identity that you could like kind of create and enjoy. And if you wanted to be a liberal, you could be, and you didn't have to like be yourself, and you didn't have to worry about what you said coming back to you. And now with the age of Facebook, like, you are you. And I think people forget that when they go on the internet, and that you can't take things back.
I guess I disagree. I feel like anonymity is responsible for a lot of vitriol. And in places where you are forced to use your name, usually things don't get too far. Even these Facebook comments, people stop before they say the thing that they'll regret for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's potentially true, but I think what a lot of times when the anonymity is what's causing the vitriol is when there is one person who is being themselves, and then they're being assaulted by people who can be whoever they want, you know, like you know, Bonerville 69 and things like that.
Yeah.
And also, there's that whole mentality, too, of, you know, like the driver's thing. You know, when someone cuts you off, that person's an asshole, you know? Even though that person probably had no idea you were even there. But the thing is, as soon as you got out the car and you talked to him, like, oh, okay, maybe this person's an okay dude.
Right.
So a lot of that's because you can't see them and they're not in that same space, you feel like you can get away with murder.
So I was going to say, that's the second thing, is maybe it's a lost opportunity. We didn't do enough to police the comment sections early on. Or maybe it's just human nature. That's what would happen if you give us the venue that we have.
Right. But I think that stuff still, I think you can still find really good discourse on the internet. It just depends on where you go. I think the biggest problem is
the thing, right? Like, if you have very select small groups of people who, in a self-policing environment where the membership is limited, you get good conversation.
Right.
That's sort of against everything of the early internet, right?
Right. Well, you know what they say about large masses of people, right?
Yeah.
That they're brilliant and you should do everything they say, you know? And also, I think there's a big problem with Facebook, and like, and another good example is Reddit. Reddit's like a really big thing now, and that's a huge like site aggregate, news aggregate, whatever you want. But the problem is with how the comment section, and even with Facebook, how it's all designed, is it's designed to like it or dislike it, right? In Reddit, it's what they often refer to as like, you know, it just everyone piles on what they agree with, and what you disagree with, everyone just says, go away, just because they don't like it. Even though it's a valid point, it's just not a great for discourse. And also the way that it moves the comments around. When you go back to like original message boards, you would say something, another person would say something, and it would go in logical step and chronologically order of what happened. But with things like Reddit, you have people like just saying like that one zinger and then getting instantly put booted to the top, right. And then any sort of real conversation that could have happened is like gone, and no one scrolls more than like twice on any web page,
right. That's
ever.
True. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, internet's full of haters.
Yeah.
Don't be one, Jay.
I hate it. I know. I regret
everything. Yeah.
So we have a good show tonight. Sorry to take too long about our thoughts. But before we get into it, I should tell everyone that we do have an email address now. It's listener@eeriereader.com. Please email in comments, questions. Maybe we can have a special section of Ask Corey Valancourt. Ask Corey a question. Maybe we'll get him to come on and answer.
Speaking of being a hater on the internet.
Exactly. He can be a hater on the podcast.
Dude, his Twitter is amusing all the time to me.
Yeah.
If anyone here is not following Corey on Twitter, and
what's
you're listening
C.
to
Valancourt?
I think it's C. Valancourt. Okay. Just or would you, we're getting a head shake. Go on. What is it?
VLNCRT.
VLNCRT.
There you go.
And you just for he has the funniest stuff, and it's just always so full of anger. I can tell. It's just I can see him like with the Seinfeld. What's the deal? You know.
By the way, that was Brian Graham, and that's a good segue into the next section of our podcast. We've asked for our initial premiere podcast today. We've asked the paper's publishers and founders and all-around awesome, excellent, good guys, Adam Welsh and Brian Graham, to come in and sit with us and talk about the paper and things that ticked them off in San Diego and throwing couches at windows at Penn State, stuff like that. So welcome, guys.
Hi, everybody.
Jay and John, thank you for having us on.
So, Adam, hi Adam.
Hi Jay.
Adam and I got to know each other because our kids go to school together, and that's how he invited me down to his paper. And when I first saw the Erie Reader, it was just a website without any content, right? You were just aggregating stuff to other places.
That's right.
So describe it. What was that all about?
We wanted to get the brand out in some, you know, in some real meaningful fashion. So we had our original partner, Brian and I had, was a guy by the name of Jamin Gallo, who's a web extraordinaire and still, you know, that's his career, his chosen profession. But we had a website that he designed that enabled us to kind of give our thoughts. It was just like an aggregator. We pulled text from all over the place, gave a few of our own thoughts about this stuff, and just tried to have a certain number of posts per day. But just really, the idea was get this out there and make people familiar in some way with the Reader brand.
Yeah. Now, while we planned, you were in this thing from the beginning, right?
Yes, I was.
So how to start? Like, what was the? Were you guys sitting around someday and like, hey, let's start this.
Well, Adam, and I wasn't around from the very beginning. I was in California. Adam was hatching this idea with another partner that ended up dropping out, but him and another partner were hatching this while I was in California. And he was very excited about it. I think that was about 2005. Mm-hmm. And he was very excited about it back then, talking early on, just very big ideas. And I had bought in at that point just as a fan. I thought it'd be something that would be great for Erie. And it came.
The original vision was what? Like a all weekly,
mm-hmm.
specifically?
Mm-hmm.
And was it focused on like music and events and stuff like that? Did you have a vision of what?
Yeah. I mean, really, it was, you know, kind of the if it isn't broke, don't fix it thing. You know, these publications are so similar from market to market and from city to city. It was just identifying that void here in Erie and saying, wow, this is, you know, there's a great, you know, arts and culture flowing through this place. There's a lot going on. It's crazy that there isn't a free publication like this that you could pick up that complements that mainstream media. So it really just started there. Why not bring that big city model all weekly to Erie, yeah. and then gear it to this particular community?
And how many newspapers have you run before this one?
Oh, so many. Zero.
So it's kind of like see your pants, out of your ass, hello, here's my paper.
It really was just the belief that, you know, we came from, I moved away from Erie for almost 10 years,
yeah.
and lived in a couple different places, but San Diego mostly.
Brian, you were in San Diego too then, right?
I was.
And it was, you know, you come back and forth from a place like San Diego to a place like Erie, and you always say, boy, I wish it had this and this and this. And this was just one of those things identified really early, you know, in that, you know, my time out in San Diego is, I can't believe when I come back, I can't pick this, you know, something like this up. The San Diego Reader being our, you know, our inspiration out there. And you, you know, you have to have that. You live and die every Wednesday picking that up.
Now, I want to get back on the paper again, but what's really interesting to me is that you guys were friends long before you started the paper. When did you know each other first?
Fourth grade,
I moved to the east side and started attending Holy Rosary grade school over on East 28th, which is no longer open. But it was a great school. I met a lot of good friends, including Adam and a whole bunch of other guys that I'm still good friends with.
Did you guys play Little League together or anything like that?
No, soccer. We were on the soccer team together.
I was a bench warmer.
Were you bench warmer?
I have very few videos. I was okay at soccer, so I wasn't on the bench. But I have very few videos of myself as a kid. You know, anyone in my family did not have a video. You know, video camera, whatever. But with this one that we have where, you know, there's all of us, we're in fifth grade or something like that, and you can see Brian goofing off and getting yelled at on the sidelines. Sweet. And all of us trying to run around. And for the funny thing about it is, for the most part, the people in this video out on that soccer field, we are all still really, really close friends.
Are there any luminaries that people might have heard among us?
Who are the luminaries coming out of our
grade school?
Class of 90.
Oh, we had
Eric Hicks.
Was he a pro bowler? He was like a pro bowl alternate or something. But he was, he played for the Kansas City Chiefs and the New York Jets for, he was a veteran player. He a good friend of ours. He used to have sleepovers at his house. Mm-hmm. who else? Who's the most famous person from that grade school?
It has to be Hicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, there's some, people are doing well for themselves, I suppose, out there.
That's cool. So after taking us through middle school.
Well, you know, we're all at Holy Rosary, and we're east side. This is, you know, back in kind of Norman Rockwell's America, you know, back then. I mean, it was living over there, you know, when in the late 70s and early 80s, it was amazing. Kids everywhere, you know, families everywhere. I mean, our neighborhood, I grew up three blocks away from Brian. You know, when you're really little, that's like, you know, a universe apart. You know, he lived in his, and I lived, you know, down right down the street.
Hoods.
Yeah. But still, it was. I mean, you can't, when you drive through this exact same neighborhood now, you can't even, you know, it's hard to even picture.
What street? Like, what neighborhood was it?
I lived on a street called Jackson Avenue, which is right it's between 20, it runs north-south between 26th and 28th, right next to Wayne Street. So, I mean, it's, like I said, it's right over there. There was, you know, back in the day, there was a lot of different businesses around there. And like I said, just it was a really great place to grow up. And so our school, all of us, you know, we all had the paper routes around there. We all went to the same school, you know, there at Holy Rosary, and that was it. But that was K through eight. So you're there for that, you know, for that long haul, and then high school is when everyone kind of breaks up. So he went to.
You guys broke up.
Yep, we broke up. I went to Mercier's Prep, and him and the rest of the guys went to Academy.
Although we maintained our friendship through confirmation classes. We were
no Facebook, no Twitter, confirmation class.
Confirmation classes.
I think
that's right. That'd be a great name for a social media site.
Confirmation classes?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably already up there. I'd put money on it.
I think we spent a lot of the time like drawing cartoons and passing them back and forth. Mm-hmm. I remember. I wish we still had copies of those.
So it'd be really early publishing.
Yep.
They could be. I would probably publish a few of
those.
Hey,
have
They're
you got
great.
Some left over?
Of those cartoons?
Yeah.
You would, I think, I might
they,
actually.
They weren't
those.
In my. That, you would have been the keeper of
Pylon
those.
Man was one of the cartoons.
Pylon Man. these cartoons what were those inspired by? Just random things we were thinking, or were we trying to like make them look like The Far Side or something like that?
It was always like a lot of them were like a character, or I don't know if that was you and I that was doing that, but it would be a character with an adjective describing.
Yeah,
the
you
character.
Would have like you'd create something and then just give it a funny name.
Like Garth the Hapless Brick, and then you just draw a brick that with like a frown on his face.
That was it. That's all you needed. But that's what would get you through confirmation class. That's for
we
sure.
weren't paying attention to the lessons.
We weren't paying attention. We were too busy changing the clock and trying to like erase hours off of our confirmation classes. And
2 minutes, like folks, not hours.
Yeah, I know. We really we shot very.
The nuns noticed the minutes, right? I mean the hours, but not.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to skip high school. You went to Penn State together. Was that by design? Did you like call each other up and
actually
help each other? Right,
college was kind of interesting. We were at a.
Oh, that's right. You didn't go right.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, we. He spent 2 years at Xavier. I spent 2 years at Barron and Erie.
Right.
And then I was planning on moving down there after my sophomore year, and I ran into Adam at a party, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out, me and another buddy of mine who were going to live together, who also went to Holy Rosary,
yeah,
found out that Adam was planning on going out to Penn State, too, and we were looking for another roommate.
Perfect.
It was definitely my catalyst to go down there. You know, I was in Cincinnati, and I wanted to transfer schools, and when I found out that they were going down there, it was like, oh, perfect. You know, this is a real, you know, opportunity and reason to go after it. And it was much easier to transfer into main campus than it was to get into main campus from high school. So.
Right. What did you guys go for?
My major was environmental renewable resource economics with a minor in econ and rural sociology.
I had a major in economics and international business. And no minor, actually. As a dual major.
And I remember you telling me stories about your apartment when I was writing the Penn State piece. It was right on the main drag in town, right?
Yeah, the two main streets there, you know, College Ave runs, which direction does that go? That goes
east and west.
East. Well, they both go east-west, but College Ave goes all the traffic is going to west.
It's heading
right?
west.
And so all the traffic on Beaver Avenue is heading east, and they're right, you know, they're parallel streets right there. So it's called Beaver Canyon is what they call it, and that's the kind of the place where the high-rise apartments are, all on Beaver Canyon. Everything's Beaver at Penn State.
That's lovely.
So it was a madhouse, and it was, you know, this is back, you know, before everything, really. before the riots.
Before cell phones.
Before cell phones. I thought you saw everything. A riot from your window.
We were there for these major riots. But
which
you
ones?
Know, there
they
were the biggest ones, that, and a lot has changed at Penn State since these, happened actually not for a football game or anything like that. It was in the middle of summer. You guys ever heard of Arts Fest, Penn State Arts Fest?
I think so, yeah.
Happens about a week after 4th of July, typically. Huge Pennsylvania arts festival. I mean, the whole campus really gets inundated with people from all over the place, and a lot of students come back. So it is like a football atmosphere there, in that the place gets packed. It's great living at Penn State in the summer because there's not a lot of students there, and you kind of have the run of the place. I loved living there in the summers. But for Arts Fest weekend, everybody comes back, and it just was hot weather and a lot of drunken people, and it erupted. It was a pretty crazy thing to see.
The bars closed down, and people were just drunk and restless, and somebody had thrown something. I think the rumor I heard was somebody threw beer balls, like they were like little kegs, but they were just balls of beer. So somebody threw an empty beer ball on into the middle of the street, and then people were kicking it around in the middle of the street, and then I think somebody lit it on fire. And next thing you know, there's just like a melee going on, and then it was just like a spark, and then everybody's just like throwing things off the balcony. And next thing you know, I was walking home from a party and from a bar. I was by myself, and I just hear kind of this ruckus going on. It was like a roar, and I like turned up the street, and there was a huge bonfire in the middle of the street. People were tearing down light poles and sticking them through car windows like they were toothpicks. People were like, I got a bottle thrown at my head. It like exploded like 6 inches away from my head. Probably would have killed me if it would have hit me. This just went on for like 2 hours before the fire engines finally came in. And
well, this Beaver Canyon's all, just think of it, it's all balconies. So all it is high-rise apartments with a bunch of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of these balconies with students packed onto these balconies throwing things off and whatever. But, I mean, the scene down below was just crazy. I mean, packed with cars. No cars had windows. Cars are flipped over. Every street light post torn down and, you know, put through, you know, cars through the windshield and out the back. It looked insane. But
and no idea of, like, what really caused
there was no reason.
Yeah.
And it was – I always – like, from that moment forward, it kind of, like, gave me an idea of just how, like, how loosely society really is held together. If, you know, once you just give anybody the smallest excuse and they can easily turn into a wild animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that this is, you know, indicative of our entire college experience down there. This is just, I mean, we were right there. I mean, to give you an idea of where we lived, you know, this stuff was happening right, you know, right below our balconies. Yeah. But we weren't doing that.
We weren't riding.
My brother went to Maine, and my dad one time went to go pick him up after a semester was over, and he was talking to me about, and maybe you guys can confirm this story, because this is like one of those stories that dads tell, and you're like, I don't know, Dad. I don't know if that's true. But he was saying that when the students leave at the end of a semester, at the end of a year, you know, for the spring semester, that when, like, instead of, like, unpacking, you know, and, like, carrying everything down, they'll just, like, we'll throw things. Like, literally just, like, drop chairs, tables, just from the windows down to the ground.
We lived in an apartment where it was a furnished apartment.
Right.
And it was small, but we had 5 people total living in it. And we decided, one of our buddies actually broke the couch that came with the apartment, and we did throw all of our furniture away. So we were people that took our couch and chairs and everything and threw it down into the dumpster.
Forego the security.
Yeah, we said
deposit.
Forget about it. So our entire you walk into the apartment, the entire living room was all it was a giant, dirty, empty floor with a little DJ booth and a bar. So it was just ready to have people come over and have a party. There was a kitchen, and then there was 2 bedrooms. One of them had 3 bunks, and one of them was just one giant, disgusting pillow. It was just pillows and mattresses on the floor, and that's it.
Yes, people, these are our leaders, civil leaders of the today.
Yeah, it was quite an apartment.
So after that, that's when you moved out west to San Diego?
Yeah.
Abandoning the Love Nest?
We were there. I went to Penn State my junior year.
Did you have a nickname for the apartment? What's
Club 303.
Club 303. It was okay. 303 Cedarbrook. I'm still AdRock 303 in all of my internet stuff. I've had that since college. I've never changed it.
That's perfect.
But when we moved out to California, there was just 5 carloads of people that for lack of anything else going on, went out, and then Brian stayed behind for a little bit and then joined
you
up.
Suckered him out. Now, you were doing finance in California, is that right?
I moved from State College to Washington, D.C. for almost a year and was working as a stockbroker, which I ended up getting a transfer within the company out to San Diego and continued to work in finance for a good 10 years.
The money was too much, right? It was too good?
Too good. I had to come back to Erie.
So, yeah, you guys were in San Diego for how long? About 10 years?
Oh, no. I was there for 5 years.
5 years?
I was there from 2000 until 2009. So
okay, the weather was perfect, right? The ton of beaches, lots of hot girls on the beach, right? Bikinis and surfing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Great fun.
Great people, great friends, great fun.
So why the hell did you move back?
Yeah, right?
My answer is simple. I got married out there. We had our first child, Ellie, out there. And then as soon as my wife got pregnant, I knew this is not going to be the same. So we started thinking pretty quick about moving to a different place that had a different kind of quality of life for having little kids.
And is that Ashley's from here as well, your wife?
She is. Funny enough, she's actually from San Diego, but
really?
I met her here in Erie. Yeah.
Right.
What makes San Diego not good for raising a family?
For me, I'm only talking for me.
Yeah,
it's fine for plenty of other people, some of which we know really well and are great friends and are never going to leave there, but you know, I didn't like commuting. I didn't like not having a house. I didn't like not having a yard. I mean, just all of this, like I said, just quality of life stuff that I was not close to attaining out there. So
what did you do in San Diego?
I was mostly trying to become a screenwriter and spending a ton of time and a ton of energy doing something for zero money doing that. But for money, I did a lot of different jobs. Waiting tables and managing at restaurants was like the main thing, which is great for, you know, for making money. I made great money doing that.
Yeah. So what brought you back to Erie, Brian?
I was visiting Erie twice a year, and I would visit in like 4th of July and Christmas, both great times to visit Erie. I'd get a little dose of the Erie summer and think, you know, I could definitely handle this. Same thing with winter. It's nice to, when you're in San Diego, you have one season, and actually starts to drive you a little bit crazy, especially if you're you know, commuting, stuck in traffic, and it's just blue skies every day, and you're going in and working under fluorescent lights, and it's blue skies outside. You really start to long for weather, I found, and I found myself missing Erie, and I was just tired of working in a non-creative field where I felt kind of stifled, and I was just really looking to do something more entrepreneurial, and I felt like Erie would be a much easier place to start something up than San Diego.
Erie needs the startups.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. I mean, I think that's like the one of one of the coolest things about the Reader to begin with is just that. I mean, it's something that we all desperately wanted and needed, but just no one stepped up to do it.
Mm-hmm. I remember when we would sit in my basement and we were just, you know, we had that initial website out, but we knew we were going to go into print, and just, I would always think out loud, like, man, I mean, are we the only ones that are going to do this? And I was kind of in disbelief a lot
right.
of the time, and I, you know, people would remind us, yeah, you are, you know, apparently you are the only two that are going to actually do it, so.
So, how did you start it? Like, I mean, where'd you get the money? How did this, I mean, it's a real paper now. It's got circulation, it's got advertisements, it's got writers such as they are. How did you put that all together?
We started with pretty much zero startup capital.
Just my dad.
Yeah, I mean, I had a little bit of money saved up that I used to buy a MacBook Pro and all the Adobe Creative Suites that you need to, you know, like Photoshop and InDesign and Illustrator and those things that you need to actually produce a thing. But other than that, there was really no startup cost. It was just a lot of time spent. We started in Adam's basement, just studying. You know, we were collecting all papers from all the other cities and just looking at them, seeing what we thought would work in Erie. The design elements that we liked, and spent the first, you know, almost 6 months just kind of coming up with a name and a logo. We spent a ton of time coming up with the name Erie Reader and the logo.
We were tossing around a lot of different.
What were some of the other names?
Oh,
it was
Erie Weekly. Since we're bi-weekly now, it's a good thing we didn't pick that one.
Erie Bi-Weekly.
Right.
Was there any more on that short list that you can remember?
Well, do you remember the New Erie Press?
New Erie Press was never a strong contender for me.
That but was I like remember the, it the, sticks out.
The early days in mm-hmm. 2005 before I was involved, it was New Erie Press.
Yeah, something
There's
more.
There's actually a logo that for that somewhere.
Yeah, that my cousin mocked up. But yeah, as far as money and startup and all that stuff, really it was my parents gave us a little bit. I mean, not much, but they were our only investors. This just served to, I don't even know what the heck we did with that, but I mean, it was definitely useful.
Well, we printed out some little postcards that we'd go to like 8th Grade Tuesdays
right.
and hand out postcards to the crowd to try to get people on the website. And then we had a countdown clock on the website. Like, I think we started 3 months out saying that there's something huge is coming and in this many hours, be on the lookout. we got a mock-up printed up at the Corey Journal that we took out, and Adam and I used that as a sales tool, and we hit up, we spent many days just driving around doing cold calls with this mock-up. And
mock-up was how many pages?
Something like, I think it was a 40-page
mock-up. 40-page mock-up. It had,
close to.
You know, he laid it out. We had some photographs in there and just basic design elements for, like, sections. But it was really, the whole thing was having to go out and explain to people what is the concept,
was
you know,
that
what
hard?
Is an all-weekly. Yeah, that was the hardest part.
I mean,
because, sure.
like, it, for me, I mean, maybe it's just because, like, I have been to other cities, you know, and I've seen, like, the Chicago Reader and things like that. And it's like, yeah, these are normal things. These are things that make sense. And that's one of the things that always kind of bugs me sometimes about Erie, like how so many things need to be, like, explained. Like, yeah, these are just things that cities do.
It was so much easier every time you'd run into somebody who at least traveled.
Right.
You know, if you traveled, then you knew
what
we were doing. And that was always great.
But we had a lot of people that would say, yeah, we know what you're trying to sell. We already have that. It's called the Showcase.
Like, oh, right.
No, not really.
Right.
Yeah, not quite.
Mm-mm. You know, and they're very different products. You know?
Right.
So, I mean, then you explain the whole thing. But, I mean, there were enough people to buy in with just this mock-up that had, you know, fake Latin-looking text, you know, populating these fake sections and whatever, and believed in what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. And the original sale, it's so funny, the original sales pitch that we were out there giving these people is still the exact same one that we use now. So, I mean, it's nice to know that we've been able to...
What's your sense?
Just what we want to do. People want to know what we're doing with the reader. And it's always the same line of, you know, this is a positive piece of press about Erie that is designed to move Erie forward. You know, we're here. We're invested in the city. We want this to be the best, you know, possible place it can be. And I think that's one thing that the reader's always done well is no matter what the subject was, it's been, you know, it's not sensationalistic. And we really don't, you know, we're not out here to just kill and, you know, crush certain organizations or people, whatever the subject is. It's we have that kind of positive right. Erie reader angle on it.
Yeah.
Not crushing people. What?
Not yet.
You know what I mean. Yeah. Not yet.
not yet. Well, no, I think being positive is extremely important, especially in the age of like the internet with Facebook and all that stuff. Now it's so easy to be cynical and like kind of like, you know, a hater, as we spoke earlier. And it's right. so important to always be
the
positive.
Erie Reader is not a cynical
publication
at all. And I guess that probably sums it up better than I did. So yeah. But you're right.
People do like to read about bad things, and that's I'm sure that's why the Times puts that as a headline whenever they can. It grabs people's attention, and they like to talk about
and
it.
They if somebody, sell papers.
If you know there's a murder or big robbery. It,
oh yeah, that stuff. No, I'm glad we don't cover that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a difference between covering a robbery or a murder, right, that happened, and a different in covering, say, a crime wave and investigating the causes and the effects. And
that's a good example,
right? That's, I mean, that's more what the reader does.
Mm-hmm. And that's the easiest example. We had a crime, you know, kind of a crime cover that we did, but the whole angle was, who are the people in this community who are fighting against this, who's standing up to this, and what are they doing? So that's right. A simple example of what I'm talking about.
Right.
Exactly. Cool. So how hard was it putting together the first paper edition? How many mistakes did you make? How much did you not sleep?
I'll remind everybody, the first 12 that we did were weekly.
Right.
So we never, for 12 weeks straight, we did, there was no exhale. It was just as soon as it came out, it was right back to, you know, into the process.
Right.
And I think we realized before that, you know, that 12, I mean, obviously we planned on moving to every 2 weeks, but it saved our sanity and it was, it made it a much better product doing that.
Yeah, well, run us through the decision about the weekly divide.
We've been talking to a lot of people, especially advertisers. I mean, a lot of obviously this is driven by, you know, the ads that that we sell and put in there. And, you know, for a brand new publication like that, basically it was, you know, who knew what kind of traction it was getting in the community at that time. And shelf life was, you know, was a big thing. If we could give these advertisers a better shelf life for their investment, then you know, I think that really helped, you know, help drive that decision. But also, you know, as much as there is going on in Erie, and it's easy to say that now in the summertime, because there's so much going on in the summers in Erie, this every 2 week model has really served us well in terms of being able to cover all this stuff and covering it well.
Right.
We definitely, our quality went up significantly when we went to bi-weekly.
Yeah.
Much less rushed feeling putting out an every issue, and I think it's a much better publication.
Cool. Ben Spagan, managing editor of the paper. How did you guys? When did you hire him, and how did you find him?
We started talking to him in, I believe it was, that January of 2011, I believe. Well, no, probably December of 2011, about 3 months before our launch, which was March 30th of 2011. We decided we needed to get somebody with a little bit of journalism experience involved, since neither Adam or I had any journalism experience whatsoever.
Yeah.
So we went to Gannon, because we had some contacts at Gannon. We were already talking about interns. I think we already had interns. We got interns pretty early on from Gannon. So we went and talked to their journalism department and met the head of their journalism department, and he, Frank Garland, and we asked him to give his top five students that he's had go through his program in recent memory, and Ben Spagan was at the top of his list. He said, if you can get this guy, get him. He's a great writer. He's a great leader. He was editor-in-chief of the Gannon Knight. So we met, we interviewed Ben. We loved him right from the start, and he's been awesome.
I should say, to the casual reader of the Erie Times and other newspapers, people don't understand the amount of work that and what effect the managing editor has in the paper. Ben really does yeoman's work on this. Mm-hmm. A lot of what you see in the style of writing and the content and the quality is because of Ben. So kudos to him.
Definitely.
Yeah, he's certainly grown into this job, and he continues to grow. You know, and I mean, he's got a very high ceiling for sure.
Yeah, he's a great editor too. Mm-hmm. Just straight up, he does a really good job at getting at what the person, at the writer's trying to reach, and then having them hit it either better or faster or quicker. You know, and I mean, I've done only a handful of articles with Ben, but every time the process has been super great, because a lot of times, there's been a few articles, actually one article in particular, I was having this terrible time trying to get, like, the good, you know, like, getting that good part out, and I was like, I have all this stuff, Ben, I don't know if any of this is good, like, what am I doing here, and, like, one email later, I was like, okay, everything's better, and that, I mean, it takes an editor, like, a really good editor to be able to do that, and not only do that, but with one writer, but have that be happening with, like, several writers simultaneously. Yeah.
Now, of course, we can't let him listen to this podcast.
Oh, no. Ben, he's
a real swell to enormous proportions.
Yeah, well, you know, I think his fashion needs a little work, though.
All right.
Well, he says a lot.
Right. The problem, too.
Well, oh, hey, he's our TV guy. Yeah. I mean, he's the face of the reader now out there. He does a great job. He's getting recognized out there in the
local
public
celebrity.
Now. Local celeb.
That's hilarious.
Just what he always
and
wanted.
We know him. That's crazy.
Yeah. Right.
I've actually touched him once. But I don't want to talk about that on the podcast.
He bought me a beer last time I saw him. He's a good guy.
Talk to me about paper. I mean, this is a crazy... I'm going to tell you right now, it's a crazy business model in this day and age to start a friggin' newspaper. What's important about having paper on the street? Why didn't you go web-only route? Why are you putting paper in these boxes around the city?
I think Erie, I mean, this particular community, that's, I mean, one thing that really helped us as we were building up to this launch was the help that we were getting from other editors and owners of weeklies from around the country. It's a great fraternity of people who, you know, if you're willing to take this plunge, then they are, you know, they'll welcome you in and help you as much as they can. And pretty much everybody we tried to contact, from huge markets all the way down to, you know, markets similar to size in Erie, were nothing but helpful. And, you know, there's something about this particular model of this particular product where you are distributing it free to all the corners of the community. People can pick it up and have it, and you know, it. Alt weeklies in general have been growing, while dailies have been on the decline for a while now, and there's obvious reasons for that. But in this particular community, my answer to your question is that Erie is a good blue collar, hands on, love to have a paper type of community, and I don't think that they've ever had something like this at their fingertips, that they could go to so many different places and be able to pick up for free and then read all of this stuff about Erie and about the people in this community. So I always thought it was a no-brainer. I always thought this is going to be huge in Erie. I ignored all of that other stuff.
It's, if you're starting something new, it's a lot harder to get somebody to ask somebody to come find you than it is to just put it in front of their face like we did with this paper. It's just, we put it everywhere right from the very beginning. If we were just an online presence only, you'd have to be saying, come find the Erie Reader, rather than here it is.
Right.
Pick it up.
I know you guys have talked a lot about new media and such whatnot at like the Jefferson Society, but it seems to me what you're doing is really old media.
I guess it all depends on how people are accessing all of this stuff. And, you know, we're able to have the paper, but you have to be able to put this out through all this new media. You know, people want to access our information on their cell phone and their tablets as much as they do, you know, want to pick it up. I'm not saying that that's what it's like right now, but that's certainly how we could be, you know, where we'd be moving into. but this, you know, Erie allows us to do all of it, you know.
We're embracing all forms of media,
right.
new and old.
I guess I didn't mean to imply that old media is bad. In fact, sometimes I think an emphasis on new media forgets the bedrock of what makes media consumable, right?
Like mm-hmm.
good content, reaches out to the community, involves the community, that kind of thing. I think, I don't know, personally, when you talk about why a paper is important to this paper, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you're right. I mean, Erie is a paper-driven town, but I think, especially for weeklies, all towns have a weekly.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing about a weekly is that your coffee shop, and there's a stack, and you grab one, you sit down, and you leaf through it, right? And if, you know, I remember when we lived in San Francisco, if we were out in town, and, you know, this is before cell phones, like, hey, what are we going to do tonight? Oh, there's an SF Weekly, or there's, you know, the East Side,
right.
East Bay Express, or whatever it's called. And you just leaf through it looking for movies we're playing or what shows we're going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reader does that, too. I mean, it's everywhere downtown, and people just scoop them up.
There's an experience of just of picking up a paper too, or a magazine, or I could go online and read the new Rolling Stone online right now, but I prefer to wait till my issue comes in the mail, and I'll, you know, it's kind of just an experience where cracking it open and
right.
you have your favorite sections that you jump to first, and it's something that you can't duplicate online, I don't think, even with a tablet.
How has your circulation been growing since you started?
Our distribution area is pretty much the same. I mean, there's many more stops now, but you know, kind of that northeast to Edinburgh to Girard, with that heavy focus on Erie it's always been the same. We've just been saturating that window with a few, you know, kind of outlier areas. But you know, we have 10,000 copies that go out. That's been like that for a long time, and we have not increased that, only for, you know, special things where we know we're going to be distributing more. But you know, we've been able to do a really good job of making sure that people want it, and you're anywhere in that the window I just described there, then you'll have an easy time finding it.
Right. I thought it was an we were at what's it called, the music series out here on Liberty Park.
Eighth grade.
Yeah, we had a VIP mm-hmm. tent, and we're handing out papers to the crowd. It was interesting because some people were like, "Oh, the reader." Psh! It was the first day that it was that Wednesday when it came in, and there are other people who have no idea what it is. Sort of walk by you. Well, there's people who just walk by and think you're trying to sell them something, and there's the other people who walk by, look away, look back, and stop and walk backwards and grab it, you know, and you can see them strolling off, like leafing through it, like, oh, this is a new discovery, and that's kind of mm-hmm. what you feel like. Especially in that article.
Oh, for sure.
I remember the first time I saw someone reading a reader that I didn't know, right, that wasn't my mom, reading something I had written, you know, at a cafe, and it was like,
what do you think?
Yeah. I still love seeing that.
I was at the bar once at Crooked Eye, just hanging out with Kim, having a drink in the back room, and this guy says to me, he goes, "Are you Jay Stevens?" I'm like, "Why, yes, I am." And he goes, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah." He said he was reading the reader, and he was just like, he was mad at something I had written, and was just joking.
That's great.
And it was me. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So
it's perfect.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting.
I mean, I still love dropping it off at places where there are people waiting to pick it up.
Yeah.
I still love seeing when I'm out anywhere and I see people just pick it up off one of the stacks. When I see people walking down State Street or whatever, I mean, it's still. I mean, it's always a little thrill.
I had somebody threaten Corey.
Oh, good.
Through me when I was dropping off the papers.
What did he
once.
Say?
Well, he's like, "Hey, are you that Valancourt guy?" And I was like, "No, I'm Brian." He's like, "Will you tell that dude if I ever see him, I'm gonna bounce his head off the concrete."
Really?
He didn't like the Crap Rock article. He was a big Kansas fan, and
oh,
Corey
yeah.
Corey had made some.
Your Kansas fans, they're
bouncing your head.
is
Corey like the de facto Erie Reader bad boy? Is that
he is the bad
boy? Oh, he's the bad boy.
Yeah, he's the bad boy. He's
sunglasses indoors.
That's yeah. right.
You just give him all the cannon fodder, the things that, you know, people are going to get real riled up about. Here, Corey, you yeah. handle this one.
He brings us a lot of fodder too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's perfect.
It's like what Steve Dallas from Kind of Remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to have him on the show occasionally.
He would, I'm sure he'd be happy to come in for it.
I don't know. I don't know if he would. So we'll have to convince him. Maybe we'll give him a
drink or something. If we bring beer, he'll come.
He'll be here.
I have actually a pretty good question. I think maybe it will be a good way to, I guess, lead us to the next one. Is so the success, like, how do you guys measure your success? And are you guys, do you consider yourselves at this point successful?
That is a good question. I guess, I don't know. I don't consider myself or it a success yet.
Right. What would it take?
Certainly not resting on, you know, any laurels here, saying that we've done it. I think that a lot of people never expected us to kind of hit that 2-year mark. You know, that's always, that was like the benchmark. Yeah, well, you know, come talk to me after 2 years. You know, we do have great momentum, and I have one thing. I have a hard time personally sometimes really understanding the impact that it has in Erie. I mean, I know it does. I know it does have an impact. I know people, a lot of people, really appreciate this kind of news and this kind of coverage and stuff like that. But it's hard to kind of get outside of just, you know, working right in these pages and having really understand how the ripple effect is in the community. But there are times when I'm able to step back and see it. And
it's roaring the shore, folks.
That's right. There it is.
Live.
Our first roar.
Roaring the shore.
But no, I'm not sitting here feeling like any kind of a success just
in our 80 square foot office.
Right. I was gonna say we were sitting downtown in our palatial office.
That's right.
Fifth floor of the Mason.
What would it take to for you guys to feel successful or feel like it is a success? Is it when you actually have like a bigger space or more, you can hire more people, you go back to being weekly? What are some of the goals, I guess?
I would say going back to weekly would be a good sign. Getting a bigger office and getting a bigger paycheck every week. These are all, I mean, I still feel like we're in the very beginning stages.
Right.
Yeah.
We're still going through the growing pains and putting this in a lot of sweat equity and,
I feel like sweating right now.
The
biz terms over there.
Yeah. That means
there's been a lot of sweat
work that you don't get paid for.
That's right. And I'm all too used to that. But no, I mean, I can imagine, you know, 5 years from now having this thing be 40 pages like the mock-up, having it be, you know, with three times as many ads, us pulling down, you know, a good salary and having it be every single week. I would feel like if that was happening, I would feel, you know,
good.
I feel closer to that success you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you guys, I mean, I would say, are you getting much more advertisers still now, or is it still, still a fight?
It's always a fight, but it keeps getting better and better. And there are more and more people coming to this and, you know, I don't think that we should have expected anything else. I mean, this hasn't existed in Erie.
Right.
Forever, for generations. I think people have to see it catch on and see its impact and then say, okay, now we want to invest our money with you. You know, that's really what you're asking people to do when they advertise is, you know, this is an investment. We will give you a good return on it if you let us be the platform for your marketing, you know.
I do feel some sense of success in the fact that we are 70 issues in and still going.
Yeah, I think that is, I mean, 2 years, like, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked before, you mentioned it before, like, all the other kind of, like, weekly things that have tried to come up and go for us, that have nowhere made it nearly this long.
Right.
Like, what was the longest one prior to the reader?
I couldn't even tell you. I mean, we know of a few. There was one that came out right before we launched the paper. Something came out that was, you know, not just like the reader, but it was something that at least dealt with all what was going on in bars. And, you know, it was definitely geared for a, you know, 21 to 24, you know, year old demographic. But it came out right at the same time that we did.
Oh, no.
And it was just like, oh, God. And, you know, the main thing that made that annoying was, you know, trying to find distribution places and having to, like, compete with these other publications that are out there. And then it just kind of, you know, diluted the...
People were confusing us with
them. Yeah. And and we were just doing so much more, and it was always so frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were around for not even a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, I mean, the quality of this thing has always been you know, Paramount. So we figured, look, we can put in this sweat equity, keep having a really good quality publication out there. People will continue to appreciate it, and that's how it's gone.
The Times News put out a alt weekly that they kind of were pretending that it wasn't them, but it was them, called Tangent.
Tangent, yeah.
I think that was monthly.
That was monthly.
But it was very not really real serious subject matter. I think they had like mustaches were on the cover of one issue, and
another really young,
so hip and young cool mustaches. All the kids are gonna love it. Oh man, I can just see them like in the
editor. Did you ever see Tangent?
That's a great idea for a cover.
Yeah, I remember seeing actual like physical copies of Tangent. Yeah, and I'm like, what is this?
It was not good.
No. But it was the Times, and it really, really was. You know, the whole thing was, let's not let people know that it is the Times, which is a, you know, an important aspect of something like this. You have to be able to complement, as I said, this. You can't be part of the mainstream media. You've got to,
right,
be outside of it. So that was, I think, 11 months, and they were in and out.
Yeah. So 2 years though, and also I think now like your Erie Reader stuff is everywhere. On TV, on radio, mm-hmm. You guys are at all the major events. The spring art show, you guys were there. I mean, Ben was bartending. Brian, you were also bartending.
We're throwing events.
Yeah, you guys were throwing your own events.
New Year's Eve party.
Yeah, New Year's Eve down at the Erie Art Museum. Another great partnership.
That was terrific. That was awesome.
The Downtown Debate Series is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Ben's always on TV every Thursday. I mean, we've been able to make some great partnerships in this town. I mean, really, really great. Partnered up with some great people. And so, you know, we, that's one thing I am definitely really proud of are things like the debate, the New Year's, the, you know, what we do with Blues and Jazz Fest, all that stuff. We've done a really good job of promoting ourselves and in really cool ways and getting this and getting that brand and our name out there.
Yeah.
Who are some of the folks that gave you a hand along the way? Like, I know some people are very friendly and excited about the paper and have helped out promoting it.
Our families, for sure. Steve Overholt at the SBDC, another great name there. I don't even think Steve is with them. He's a Missoula guy.
Oh, is he?
I think the biggest, he would keep bringing us the Missoula Weekly, didn't he?
Yeah, Independent, yeah, sure.
But he was an SBDC.
Straight for them. Did you know that? Straight for the Independent.
You did tell me that.
Yeah.
CJ, I knew you'd be a great get for us.
He was showing us the Outdoors magazine. Do you remember that one?
It was Camus, which is the university magazine, but the outdoor, like, not Orion, but...
But
he was a huge help.
Yeah, Marty Schwab from Crooked Eye basically was he signed on for very early on, and we knew that would be really important since he had
he was opening up right about the. I mean, it was kind of us launching and him opening up in tandem, which is, you know, that's actually a really good example. I wouldn't have probably thought to bring up, but I mean, the Crooked Eye is such an anchor in the downtown as far as live music goes, as far as original live music goes. To have them just start coming up and us just come, it was really good timing in that, and he's been a huge supporter. You know, the universities, Jefferson, Lilly Broadcasting, Art Museum, I mean, I could go on and on of these people that have been helpful every step of the way and have believed in this vision every step of the way and have invested money with us every step of the way, and it's been some great people.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, it's interesting, you know, like, there are, I think, these like public thirsts, and every once in a while something comes along to quench them. You know? I always think of Radiohead. You know what I mean? Like, there was a thirst for some kind of music, and Radiohead came along, and then there was OK Computer. You know? And I feel like this newspaper is quenching the eerie thirst that maybe the city didn't know it had.
Well, the Radiohead of Erie.
Yes!
We are like a Jaeger driver. Drift. We're having a neural handshake and putting this thing out.
Yeah.
Good segue.
That would have been a good segue into there. But I want to say before we would ever get into Pacific Rim, the one thing that people said to us a lot in the beginning was that A, you're never going to have enough content to fill this thing up, and B, you're not going to have enough talent in town to find it. And both of those things have been two of the easiest things about this. The content you know, never stops. We are always working probably three issues ahead, you know, have planned out these, you know, the next three issues all the time. And most importantly, the talent of the people that we have been able to tap to bring in and work for the reader, you guys obviously included, is great. And I think that our group, our core group, you know, who really make this thing go, is top notch. I mean, I read it and I say to myself every time, if I pick this up anywhere, I would be happy with this. And that's
cool.
It's a good feeling.
You guys have favorite issues? The Buddy Guy issue, number one.
That is a great issue for our premiere issue to score an interview with a blues legend like Buddy Guy. That was pretty exciting. I don't know if that gets my favorite, though. Weight of War, although it was a very, very heavy subject matter, no pun intended.
It's about the soldier committed suicide.
Yeah, it was PTSD suicide. That was very, I think that was a very important issue for us.
Yeah, I think that helped put us on the map for a few people, just in terms of, oh, look at this. This weighty subject matter that they are also going to be talking about instead of just what's going on. Weighty.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people have to talk about that issue. That was interesting.
You need Corey in here for that.
I know. There's a story behind it, folks. It's good.
The geocaching issue.
Oh.
That was fun. Are you a geocacher, Brian? That was your friend, right?
I've been geocaching.
You met Scotty.
I didn't like it too much. I felt like I was going to get in trouble half the time. Like, we're like kind of just hanging out in places we're not supposed to be, looking really shady.
Yeah. I think that's half the fun. I have to say, I enjoyed the one on Prescott a lot because it wasn't like that at all. You know,
mm-hmm.
But
I gotta give another one for me is the GAF issue that you did, because one just happens to be one that I constantly
refer to
when I'm out talking to people. I refer to it probably more than I even refer to the Way to War, just because I always use it as the example of look what we did with this. Look what Jay was able to do with this much time, and how it's still the best, most comprehensive story of that. Yeah. And there are other examples. That one pops to mind.
The branding of Eerie issue.
Ben wrote that one, yeah.
Which I really liked it because it had a sticker on the cover.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a peel-off sticker.
Great cover.
That was cool. That's a good idea. Cool.
Yeah. It's 70, huh?
Yeah. It's hard to pick. Hard to pick.
I know.
So many to choose from.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming down, guys, and telling us your life story. Is there anything I missed that you want to...
We saw Pacific Rim.
Give me the closing arguments on why it was not a good movie.
I think you might have talked about expectations when you were introducing it. I am a huge Guillermo del Toro fan. Mm. I expected
more.
Oh yeah, I mean especially after like Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth. I mean
Pan's Labyrinth was really good.
He's got the goods, and this was. I mean, it's a great blockbuster popcorn movie, but the characters are hollow. The end. You said you don't care about spoilers. The ending is so...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I'm not even going to say it. I have a problem with the ending.
Yeah.
but really, for me, it has to be... It starts with the characters, and for this one, it wasn't there.
It was just flat.
Yeah.
Just pretty flat. I mean, because, again, like, is it just a big, dumb popcorn film then?
No, because, you know, think about Guillermo del Toro and how he does it. I mean...
Yeah, he's a thinker. That's the thing.
Each one of the monsters, for example, like, has it... I mean, these are they have their own personalities, their own the designs of it. I mean, you can tell it's this incredible imagination at work, these big robots, whatever. But then everything that kind of just surrounds that is...
The opening scene is jaw-dropping. It's worth the price of the ticket just for the opening scene.
Yeah, just for the opener?
Yeah. And it's probably about a 15-20-minute opening. And
how long is it? It's like 2.5 hours?
It's too long.
Yeah,
that's what I think. It's all movies. I'm just going to go ahead and say this: movies need to be shorter. Mm-hmm. Remember when movies were an hour and a half, or maybe.
It's funny when you're writing a screenplay, you aim for like this 90-page screenplay, and typically a page of a screenplay is a minute on screen. So you're always writing to try to achieve this, you know, this nice tidy, three act 90-minute thing. But they're way too long. Comedies are way too long. Action movies are way too long.
Like The Hobbit. The Hobbit is a perfect example.
Oh, The Hobbit.
That does not need to be three movies.
It does not. It shouldn't be. It should be one.
It should be a movie.
Yeah.
And maybe a two-hour movie.
That is a sloppy mess,
though. It is. Oh my god! I mean, it's beautiful. Don't get me wrong, but like I feel like Peter Jackson suckered me into watching yet another movie of people running.
Yeah,
you know, like I feel like I got tricked again. Damn you, Peter Jackson!
Right. Although the troll scene was pretty good.
Yeah,
was that the first movie, right? Or was that the second?
What
The Trolls, like when they bump into the Trolls?
Song. That's the first
movie. That's the first movie.
That second one hasn't even come out yet.
No. Oh, it hasn't. Mm-hmm. When is that coming?
Never.
Well, it's coming out in, I think, December.
Did he not make them all at the same time?
I think he probably shot them all at once. But when's the last time you guys actually read The Hobbit? Because I thought, like, the spiders...
When I was a child.
Yeah, because my father read it to me. Yeah. And so I thought, like, the spiders were really early on.
No, they're pretty late. I've actually read it recently. My daughter has read it.
Are they following it in the right order?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're drawing from...
The Silmarillion?
Other source material than just The Hobbit.
Also from The Lord of the Rings. They're part of The Hobbit. You know, he wrote The Hobbit before he wrote The Lord of the Rings, so there's backstory that didn't exist at the time he wrote The Hobbit that he made up later for Lord of the Rings that he's re-injecting. Jackson is re-injecting to The Hobbit. The Hobbit is a nice, tight, fantasy little novel.
It's a little romp.
But the end of it is the dragon, right?
Yeah, Smaug the dragon.
But the end of the movies is not going to be the dragon. The end of these movies is going to be some huge war.
There is a war after the dragon.
So that's, I mean, there's a three-way
battle between the humans, the dwarves, and the orcs.
So that's what these movies are building up to.
Yes.
The dragon will probably be killed in the second movie, and then I don't know what the heck's going to be on the third one.
There's actually, I suspect that the dragon and the battle take place in the third movie, because there's a whole bunch of...
Oh, you don't think they'll kill it in the second one?
No, because there's, they're putting a lot of backstory. He met Gollum, right?
That was the best scene, by the way. Like, that was literally the best scene of that whole movie was the Gollum and...
The riddles in the dark.
Right. Scene. And the thing was, and I looked into this, that was the first scene shot.
Oh, was right.
Yeah.
Okay. Andy Serkis is a director of, whatever they call that, associate director, co-director, whatever, some kind of other director for these movies, so...
Yeah. Yeah, and that was the first one shot, and that was the best one. And also, Martin Freeman, I think, is a terrific actor. He did not deliver. I don't know what it was. I mean,
he was trying to do his best Ian Holm the whole time.
Right.
I just hated how the orcs are supposed to be these fearsome killers, and they could not kill a single dwarf out of those 14. And with all the chances they had to kill at least one of them, they're all still alive.
Yeah. Orcs are hardy, man.
Yeah,
they are.
But yeah, movies are too long. I agree.
Yeah, back to that.
The Hobbit was a quick little, you know, kid's
novel. Perfect.
Novel.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the other ones were self-indulgent.
If you could make The Hobbit into 3 movies, then you could make the Lord of the Rings trilogies into 12 movies.
At least.
Until an HBO miniseries.
Don't give them more ideas.
An HBO miniseries of the Lord of the Rings would be a bad idea.
Yeah, Game of Thrones. If that's any proof of the pudding of what can be done now.
Yeah. Game of Thrones has a big panel at Comic-Con right now. I know they're you got to really be on spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Have you read the books?
I'm on season 2. I have not read the books.
The books are way better. The books are terrific. Though you, at the end of it, you get really tired of all the food stuff.
I have to say, by the time I was done by...
It's really bad. at the end of the fifth book, and the fact that every single character has this weird infatuation with food, you're like, I get it. You like food.
The series is pretty damn good.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
the show
it definitely
is good.
Grew on me, and it's,
but
it's
the show good. Is departing from the books.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Not the major things, but like a lot of like the tertiary things, and they're changing a few out how some things work.
Jay, did you ever watch House of Cards on Netflix?
Yes, I did.
Did you see that got 14 Emmy nominations today?
Really?
I think.
I thought it was my wife didn't like it so much. She liked it, but I was really into it.
I'm just asking because it's all inner beltway politics.
We're actually seeing
stuff,
the new one, The Orange is the New Black.
How's that?
Well, we saw the first episode last night. It's pretty good.
What I was going to bring up, I've read that that's the best of the Netflix series so far.
Over
House of Cards.
Wow, House of Cards is really good.
I'm just saying critically, people are saying that. But it is, you know, the fact that House of Cards is getting all these Emmy nominations is pretty cool. And I was just going to say, how do you guys like the way that they present? I mean, they could easily release one episode a week if they wanted to, but they are, you know, what they do is they give it all to you so you can binge watch.
They know their user base.
They know how we watch.
They know how people consume media now. Mm-hmm. And it's great to finally see a company kind of get it a little bit and then capitalize on it. Though, I mean, not all of the, they're not necessarily putting out gold every time. I mean, Hemlock Grove was terrible.
Oh, yeah, I stopped watching it.
That was really bad.
I think I got to like the fifth.
Arrested Development, like everyone's really excited for that. And so far, it's good.
It's funny.
It's funny, but it's, you know, it's hard to capture lightning.
The production value, I thought, of House of Cards was just so good.
It was great.
And David Fincher is a producer, and he directed the first one or two episodes. But, I mean,
I thought it was...
I think it's awesome, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I assume they're going to have another season.
I think it's done filming.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but no, I'm hopeful to see that other studios And I guess the big one is HBO. I think HBO needs to realize that Go should not be attached to a cable, like, account. Like, because you think about the expense for that, right? In Erie, to have, like, cable, it's, like, $70 a month just to have basic cable.
Right.
Then you have to add HBO on top of that, which is another, what, like, 30 or 40?
Does anyone at this table have cable?
No.
No.
Nobody does.
No, because everyone's
cutting. I don't even have a television.
Right, because Netflix, right? And Hulu or whatever. But still, in order to get Go, you have to have a cable. You have to have it.
All of those stations, yeah. ESPN, any of them. You can watch all these channels on your phone if you have digital cable.
Right. That's dumb. Just sell. If HBO Go just said, "Yo, we'll do subscriptions just like Netflix."
Or if they just put their stuff on Netflix, it would be great.
Right. I mean, I'm fine with them even trying to like keep it to themselves. You know, having their own little garden because that's fine. You know,
like
I wanna,
how much is Netflix?
Yeah, like I want to watch. I mean, because Newsroom is awesome. You know, even that weird show Girls. You know, that's weird enough that I will watch.
I would pay $1 an episode to watch Game of Thrones as it comes out,
right? Or Newsroom. Yeah. So that's my 2 cents.
There you go.
I like it.
More distribution. More methods of distribution.
I like it.
Netflix is on the right track.
How long is this thing? We got to wrap this up.
Yeah, we do. Oh my god.
We got just quick. John and I are going to do a pick of the week of what we're looking forward to this week in Erie. John, you got something?
I haven't been paying attention because I'm actually leaving for San Francisco this weekend.
So you're looking forward to your flight.
I'm looking forward to my vacation to go visit my. Actually, it's not even vacation. It's like what's half work, half vacation? Because I'm going to be on vacation.
I think there's
like,
a word for this, like workcation.
Workcation.
Yeah, that's what I'm going
is
on a workcation.
A I think
he
so.
Just made it up. So Brian,
it is
Brian,
now.
Yeah, we'll give it to Brian. Brian coined that. So
I was forming my mouth around.
Oh, you know what this is?
Uh oh. Time to go.
The meter. We're about to get towed in 15 minutes.
Yeah, we gotta wrap this up. So what?
You guys can go. We're just gonna wrap.
So the big thing is we're on the shore, though. That's the big thing, which I'm not. I'm happy I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm. I wish I was leaving.
Yeah, it's one of the things that irritates the Erie reader.
How about you? What's your pick?
I was gonna go with the Seawolves. The Richmond Squirrels are coming into town. They're the San Francisco affiliate, but I want to plug Despicable Me 2. I saw it with my kids. It's funny.
Wow.
It's good. Have you guys seen? You must have seen the first, right?
The first one has been a great babysitter for me many a time.
Yes. And as far as summer action blockbusters, I mean they're superhero movies.
Yeah.
Essentially, but they're done well, not like Man of Steel, which is apparently a piece of crap. But this one is awesome, and the bad guy is Nacho Libre. So
nice.
It's pretty sweet. I recommend it. But yeah. When it cools off a little, maybe I'll go back out to the ballpark.
Yeah, I don't get out. I don't get out enough to the ballpark. It's such a great park too.
Yeah.
Where are the Seawolves in the standings right now?
I wish you hadn't asked me that. last time I looked, they were second in their division. They had a pretty brutal losing streak there for a while.
Is it Altoona who would be number one in that?
I believe so.
Okay.
And I mean, you know, it's interesting because. The Detroit Tigers, I could go all day about baseball,
I had to ask you one baseball question.
Have a very poor minor league system. So a lot of the talent we're seeing in the Erie Seawolves probably aren't going to be impact players at the major league level.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But other teams like the Altoona Curve are packed. Richmond Squirrels, not so much. They've got a second baseman, Joe Panic, who might be a scrappy second baseman.
I love his name.
Yeah.
Joe Panic?
Or Penny. I'm probably pronouncing it.
I like Joe Panic better.
Panic is good.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what's the name of the Minnesota Twins affiliate, but they have amazing players in their squad. So guys come in all the time, and even if you're just there to see a game and you're not into the prospects, it's such a great place and a great venue to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really chill. I like watching.
What's Buck games. Night?
That's
Monday.
A good question.
Monday.
Is it Monday?
I don't know if it's this Monday, but they are on
Mondays. Yeah, that's when I like to go.
Cheap
Can't
beer.
Go wrong.
Cheap beer and cheap hot dogs.
Yep.
So again, our email is listener@eriereader.com.
Thanks you guys for having us.
Thank
sure.
you so much
Thank
for having
so
us in. It was a pleasure.
And email us with your questions or comments. We'll see you later.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just want to plug, so Falling Hollywood provided our track today, so enjoy the music as well.
Yeah, they're good guys.
Yeah, and Matt Flowers, of course, and bands is a Erie Reader writer.
Yeah, so. I know Nick more, and I think Nick's way cooler.
Oh, is he?
Okay.
We can each have our favorite member.
Big shout out.
See you guys later. Thanks.
brought the shot of love that. When you're climbing over a wire, we'll rip off your dress. Lemon and go.